everybody, and welcome to this special Film Actually episode all about Bond. Or that's what we'd like to tell ourselves anyway. My name is Dave McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Dude, this is the weirdest feeling. Like, just to hear that comment and see you.
I know, you're right in front of me here.
I know, it's like old strange and studio-like.
That's like the old days.
Yes, except for outdoorsy, because we have crickets.
We have crickets. We are recording on a hot, balmy summer's night, and we have crickets. So
I like it. It gives the show atmosphere.
It's kind of that Michelle Shocked era, you know? I don't know if you heard that album. And to your left, Richard Gray.
Yep.
How are you, Richard?
I'm ecstatic. I can stroke Josh's hair while I do
this show. It's luscious, isn't it?
It's nothing like
That's right. My hair's growing for like almost a full year since I've kind of seen
it's
you guys
It's a
in
balmy
studio.
Summer's night. I'm here recording a podcast, getting to stroke Josh's hair.
Yeah.
What more could you want?
Well, what more could you want? I think bliss. What more we could want is a little bit of Bond. Don't you?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I think so.
Can we go for a little bit more than just a little bit? I'd like a little bit more than just a little bit of Bond. Like,
cool.
Quite a bit of Bond.
Sorry, Josh. Weren't we doing the Bourne films?
Shit, man.
Well, actually, you know, if you think about it, the Quantum of Solace and Casino Royale weren't far from the Bourne films, really, were they? Okay, so we have been away for a while. It's so nice that we are all in studio together. This is one of our specials because, of course, Film Actually is still on hiatus. We've settled on a name for our next show, but we're not going to tell you yet.
No.
We will tell you at episode 100 once everything is set up and in place. But yes, the new show is actually coming along and we're finally getting there.
Spoilers, it has something to do with movies.
Well, I would hope so. So we're going to forego the normal news sections, blah, 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 but we do have to talk about two things very quickly, because there are pretty major events for particularly film buffs and geeks in particular, one of them.
Why did you point at me when you said geeks in particular?
Hand open. Oh, right. I'm pointing to both of you.
No. Right,
boy,
fair enough.
Been away for a while and cheeky as shit already.
I've been saving this up for a while.
Just doing warm-ups outside, just bitch.
Oh, did you say bitch?
Bitch.
This is a good time to mention we have an explicit tag, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, we do have an explicit tag. We always have an explicit tag on the film show, just because we might do things like...
Bitch.
Yeah, there
What can I get away with these
two? You can get away with about anything you want, but if you want an audience, you might want to curb your tongue.
So I
curb your enthusiasm.
All right, first of all, the reason why I say we got a couple things to bring up is because, whatever, it's late. We actually had our friend David Longo from Damn Good Cup come up to me at a screening the other day, who said... I can't believe you guys have not mentioned what your opinions are of Lucas and Disney. And I said, well, yeah, we are going to talk about this at some point. We just haven't had a show to do it on. But Lucasfilm a few weeks ago was bought by Disney, and just initial reactions. Josh, what did you think?
I was so glad. Yep. I was so glad. I was like one of the few people I know. Everybody's like, did you hear the news? Like it was like the bombs had dropped on Hiroshima or something. And I was just like, wait. So, sorry, you mean that series that's slowly been falling off the end of the wagon, the one that's been stretched out as far as it possibly can, the one with the last three movies being god-awful and rubbish, got delivered to another company with a chance to revive it, and all of the news that I've heard on it so far sounds like we're taking it in interesting new directions. I'm like, nah, man, that sounds awful.
Yeah, yeah,
that sounds horrible.
Yeah, that's the news they were talking about, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
all right, yeah. So that wasn't it. I wanted to make sure that was what was going on.
I'm with you, Josh. The minute I heard it, I went, that's brilliant.
Yay!
Somebody will actually do something with this property, and maybe we'll finally see a decent Howard the Duck movie.
Yeah.
Well, that was the headline I wanted to run with. Disney buys Willow, Howard the Duck. I think everyone's forgotten in this as well. I mean, like, I was ecstatic as well. Exactly what Josh said. It's like, wow, someone can actually do something with Star Wars now. That's interesting. You know, that's great. And that because they announced Episode 7, 8, 9 at the same time.
Yep.
That was really exciting.
And the possible television series. And
it's just such a great marriage because Disney and Lucas had already had a great solid relationship with the theme parks.
Yep.
There's been the Star Tours ride. There's been the Indiana Jones rides there anyway. They've always been good at working with partners. They're building an Avatar Land, which is not Lucasfilm, but you know, they've had partnerships.
Same basic concept.
Yeah. So they yeah, exactly. So they've had these partnerships going for ages. It's a match made in heaven. There's already Mickey plush toys, Jedi mush toys. Mush toys.
Mush toys.
that was my initial reaction. Gee, that's swell. and then I went, well, gosh. But yeah, no, I think it's fantastic. I think the really exciting thing is that the news that's been coming out since, that, you know, the people that are getting involved with this, and the fact that Michael Arndt, who did Toy Story 3 and Little Miss Sunshine, is writing the next episode.
And Lawrence Kasdan is writing 8 and 9. I mean, come on, this is the man who wrote Empire. You know, it's like
which was the best of the original trilogy I've heard. I've not seen any of them.
Oh, exactly. Right, okay. No, but this is like it's a chance to reboot this. I mean, like it's not the series we knew. It's far from the series we knew. Like even the films we loved, and we've talked about this multiple times on this show. Even the series we love is being tampered with now. Like we're getting to the point where they're getting so involved, they're changing our ones to suit their world. We're at the point where I'm willing to let anyone touch this.
Speaking of touching our stuff, the first thing that occurred to me, Josh, and see how you go with this one.
Yeah.
First thing that occurred to me was Disney wants to make money. They have to make $4.5 billion now. Okay.
Yeah.
Because, and so what way to make money is
John Carter 2.
Every geek out there would buy it. They'll release the original trilogy.
Damn right they would.
Uncut, but anyway, but, as they were.
But,
Blu-ray.
But Fox apparently still own the rights to...
Okay, I got a counter-argument for that too.
Yeah.
Okay, because that...
Well, I'm sure... Yeah, no, I know where this is going.
Okay, so Fox is the distributor. So they don't actually own it, but they're the distributor, all right?
Yeah, yeah,
so what if Disney said to Fox... Now, bear with me. Bear me out. Disney says to Fox...
I'm bearing.
Fox, would you be interested in making a shit ton of money and release these uncut versions of that we were going to make available to you?
Release the hounds.
Release the hounds. Fox will go, no. No, Fox is going to say, fucking earth, you give them to us, we'll release them.
Yeah. Mm. No, but my other point was, and this is the one that spun me out, because it came out of the mouths of four people I know within that first kind of like initial day and a half when this got announced. It was people like, yeah, but dude, it's Disney. I'm like, guys, the Avengers, like
the Avengers, Pirates of the Caribbean. You know, it's like,
oh no, they have no idea how to do a big budget scaled film. No,
you could not find a better studio that was more matched.
Yep.
I mean, the thing is, Disney's been struggling with sci-fi since the first Star Wars came out. I mean, their response was the black hole, which was a black hole.
And I can still remember the thing.
And they've never really had a great sci-fi hit. So what do? They do what all good businesses do. They buy the people who are, you know, okay at making.
Yeah. And let's not forget, this acquisition... You know? Is not just... Everybody keeps talking about Star Wars. This acquisition is not Star Wars. This acquisition is Lucasfilm. Mm.
Yeah.
They bought Industrial Light and Magic, the effects house. They bought THX Sound. They bought Lucas Digital. They bought Lucas Arts. They bought... I mean, everything to do... Skywalker Ranch went in the sale. Everything to do with Lucasfilm is now owned by Disney. Mm. So you can go, $4.5 billion. They got off cheap.
Yeah, they just cut their special effects budget.
Now, second piece of this news, which was a couple weeks after the sale, happened. I mean, mind you, none of this has actually officially happened yet. They've still got to pass it through, you know, all the various...
Oh, is this the charity news?
This was the second part, which, I tell you what, for all those people who are anti-George Lucas, he just scored big old brownie points. Amazing. Yeah. He turned around and said to Disney, pay the entire $4.5 billion to charity.
Yeah, it didn't even come to him.
Didn't come to him at all.
Yeah, I know, and there's moments like that when I look at the guy and I'm like, look, I don't hate you.
He's got his money. He doesn't need money from this sale.
It's moments like that I think, it's all right, you can come back. You can hit me around a little more and we can make another Star Wars.
I'm not saying I want him to make another Star Wars one. I'm saying this is a man who really for all of the things that we accuse him of, he obviously loved what he was doing. He loved his stuff, his toys. He wanted to play with it his way. He just needed to have a little bit more his fans.
He's one of those kids that, you know, like, always bet you up and then occasionally did something nice. And you're just like, I don't hate you, but you've been a bastard for a while now.
Yeah.
Yeah. No offense. Sorry.
So
George.
Anyway, so that was the that
if
was.
You're listening to this for some
we're
reason.
We're not saying
I don't
George Lucas beats up children.
We're not saying that.
And in fact, if George Lucas would like to come on and talk to us about his child beating fetishes, he can come onto the show
or just anything.
Well, like, I started down at the local playground. All right.
So the second piece of news was Kevin Smith.
He beats children. Is that what you're going to tell me?
No! Kevin Smith, you do not beat children. No, Kevin Smith made some announcements about his film career, which I thought were very interesting over this last couple of weeks.
Pray tell, David.
Hit Somebody was supposed to be his last film.
We all children, obviously.
We all remember this. Yeah. This is about his hockey film. If you go and listen to the latest edition of Hollywood Babylon, he actually throws out the whole story, basically. He lets everybody know. Basically, he's now decided to paraphrase all of this story down. He's decided to make Hit Somebody a miniseries. Mm. And he apparently already has a television deal in place for this now. Mm. This has happened very, very quickly. Mm. So one of his fans basically said to him, hey, doesn't that mean you still have one film in you? Because if Hit Somebody is a television show, then you've still got, because remember, he's retiring after Hit. Yeah. So the fan said, you've still got one film in you. And so Kevin Smith went, okay, I can see that logic. And so basically he has said they are actively in the middle of pursuing Clerks 3.
Wow.
So he may go out. As he started with Clerks 1, he'll go out with Clerks 3 as his last film.
Wow.
Now, this is all assuming he can actually win over Bob and Harvey Weinstein.
Well, they seem like reasonable people.
Yeah. Because apparently he owns the rights to Jay and Silent Bob, but they own the rest. So.
Well, look, I mean, like, there is some interesting subject material there, because, I mean, like, not only, like, I mean, maybe perhaps in this one we don't focus so heavily on the characters themselves, but take it back to the retail element, because, I mean, the world is changing.
People. I remember at the end of Jay and Silent Bob gave them money to buy their own store.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got that own store mentality, but then there's also there's so much about commercialism and this and that that you can kind of bring up. So it's like there is so much room to move with that kind
of
concept.
I'm actually kind
of
jazzed by this.
Did they survive the global financial crisis?
Hmm. I'm actually kind of jazzed. Look, I think the Clerks films are clever. Yep. And I think that the first one really spoke to me. As you said, the second one really spoke to you.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and that's the thing. I think they are generational. Even Kevin Smith says, Clerks was about his 20s. Clerks 2 was about his 30s. Yeah. He wants to do his 40s and, you know, finish his career on this. And I think there might be something there. And apparently he said that he's written a 70-page treatment. He says that if he pulled the trigger on this and basically said, let's do it, he could have a script within days. Mm. And everybody really likes the treatment that has read it so far. They're all saying this is really good. So a lot of the players are in. It all comes down to whether or not they can settle their differences with Harvey and Bob, which I don't see happening anytime soon.
No.
But he also said the exciting part.
Exactly.
The exciting part that I like is, well, all it takes is Bob and Harvey to pay over the money they owe, which apparently is in the millions. If they pay that money out to the people who were involved in Clerks 2.
What do they owe money for? What if they
Clerks 2 apparently was a partnership between Halloran and the guy who played Dante, the two stars,
Halloran,
and Jason Mewes and Scott Mosier and Kevin Smith.
Right.
It was a five-way partnership deal and through with Miramax. Mm. Film only cost, was it $20 million or whatever it was to make. They throwed another $10 million advertising.
Yeah.
Thank you. This is the way he described it. He doesn't give any real numbers, but if you start doing your math, you can work it out. Basically, the film took $30-35 million at the box office, and then he always does strong business on home video.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They have seen no profits.
Mm.
And basically they're saying, yes, they understand about creative Hollywood math, but they have seen no profits.
Mm.
And apparently the way he was kind of joking around, it sounds like they're in the realms of about the $10 million mark.
Wow.
And
which is about a third of your funding for the next film.
Well, exactly. And the point that was being made was Halloran, who plays Randall, is basically saying he won't do another film because he was so badly burnt by the Clerks 2 thing because of the money. He loved doing it and he loves the idea of the film, but he will not go into bed with Bob and Harvey until this is settled.
Mm. Yeah.
Because he believes he's owed money from that project. Smith has basically been, from what I can understand on this thing, he's basically been the one who's sitting there going, oh, let's not bother anybody, blah, 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 like he would normally do. And everybody else is just whispering in his ear saying, it's time for an audit, dude. You know? And finally they have put the audit in.
Yeah.
So the audit is now in, and so now it's basically, will they settle this or won't they? And if they can settle this big dispute, then Harvey and so forth will come in. Now, here's the interesting part, though. Kevin Smith wants to finance this through like a Kickstarter type thing. He wants to group finance Clerks.
Yeah.
He just thinks that would be kind of cool to go out this way, but he needs the Weinsteins to pass on it.
Yeah.
He needs them to relinquish it. You know what I mean? And then he can go into it on his own.
Hell, I'll kick in for Kickstarter.
Oh, if it goes on Kickstarter, I'm in.
Yeah.
I think we should all drop a couple of dollars in the kitty and we'll do it on the show.
Fucking
knows. When it does happen.
Yeah.
No. Like, I mean, again, like it's pointless talking about it until we know.
Yeah, what's absolutely. So this happen. Is all speculation, but it is news. Go listen to Hollywood Babylon. He goes through the whole story. It's about a 2-hour show, him, Ralph Garman, and Scott Mosier, and they just literally talk about the future of the film careers.
Or you could just listen to this show.
And we just condensed it down to 10 minutes. So
I reckon that's a pretty good deal if you're
time. Yeah, that's pretty good. But anyway, that's that. We are here to talk about Bond.
Ah, of course.
So we're 15 minutes in and we haven't spoken about Bond. So I think the first thing we wanted to do was we wanted to review Skyfall, because Skyfall came out, and we'll talk about that in more detail. And then what we thought we'd do is we would take a walk down memory lane and basically have a look at Bond in general. Hello, me. What is all that noise?
It's not me.
It's not me, either.
I don't know what that is.
No, that's outside.
It's outside. There's some festivities going on. We are sitting out on a porch.
It's a musical show. I don't even know if the audience could hear that. There was this music play.
Oh, that's like Celine's phone.
Oh, is this like a carnival in town?
Well, there was that carnival that passed through.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. So I think to kick off. Our Bond thing, we should have something like this.
Do you expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
So, let's talk about Skyfall. Let's round up some credits here. Skyfall is the, what is this, 21? 23rd Bond film. Now, according to IMDb, the summary is thus. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Go on.
Bond's loyalty to M is tested and her past comes back to haunt her, bringing MI6 under attack.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's it.
That's really all you need to say.
Yeah, that's close enough.
The rest is in the details.
Written by... where are we? I've got the...
Two ring-ins and a real rudder.
Oh! Cold! Neil Purvis, Robert Wade, and John Logan.
That's the real writer.
And based, of course, on Ian Fleming's novel. Directed this time by Sam Mendes. Look, they actually brought in a, like, Academy Award winner.
Academy Award winning director and cast.
Absolutely. Daniel Craig comes back as Bond. Judi Dench as M. These are returning people, of course. Mm-hmm. Now, Javier Bardem joins the cast this time as the bad guy, who I want to talk about. We may need to do a spoiler section because I need to talk about a couple of things with him because it was great. Ralph Fiennes. Why is it Rafe?
And why is it Fiennes? It's Rafe Fiennes.
It's Ralph Fiennes.
It's Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes, mate. Yeah, they're right. Rafe Fiennes, Naomi Harris, Bernice Marlowe, is it?
Berenice Marlowe.
Berenice? Mm-hmm. Really? Is that how you say that?
Mm-hmm. She's French.
Boy, I'm doing really well tonight, aren't I? I think I should get you to read off the credits from now on. Albert Finney, Ben Whishaw. Anybody else here we should know? Is Ola Rapace any relation to Noomi Rapace, do you think?
Yes, brother.
Brother. Okay, cool.
Like actual? Like really?
Yep.
Yeah, oh, there you go. Very good. That. All right, let's watch a trailer, or in our case, we're on an audio show, so let's listen to a trailer, I guess. And we'll come back and talk about this. So I do have a trailer here somewhere. I'm sure I do.
Just keep padding it out like this.
I'm going to keep padding it because I seem to have lost the trailer.
Play me off, Johnny.
Oh, no, sorry. Actually, I was completely wrong with that.
Oh, okay. He's going to correct himself while I find the trailer.
He wasn't brother at all. He was married to her. So if he was her brother, and that's really creepy.
Whoa.
Yeah, that is kind of creepy. Oh, why have I lost the Skyfall trailer? Okay, through the miracles of post-production, I'm going to insert a trailer right about now.
It's gone.
You both know what's at stake here.
There isn't much road left.
Take the bloody shot.
What do you say about a man like that?
3 months ago, you lost the drive containing the identity of every agent embedded in terrorist organizations across the globe.
007 reporting for duty. Where the hell have you been?
Enjoying death.
I only have one question.
Why not stay dead? There's no shame in saying you've lost a step.
They went targeting her. They wanted her to see it.
Welcome to the new MI6.
I'm your quartermaster.
You must be joking.
Author PPKS 9mm short. It's been coded to your palm print, so only you can fire it. Less of a random killing machine, more of a personal statement.
Cube.
007.
I want to meet your employer.
How much do you know about fear?
All there is.
Well, not like this. Not like him.
Just look at you. Chasing spies. England. MI6. She sent you after me, not when you're not ready, not when you would likely die. Mommy was very bad. The two survivors, this is what she made us.
Everybody needs a hobby.
So what's yours?
Resurrection.
So, what did you guys think?
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? I had the trailer all lined up. I don't know what happened. Anyway, so, Josh, what did you think of Skyfall?
I thought... Okay, let's step back a moment.
Okay.
Bond for me is not what it is for some people, and I'm going to make a statement that might upset a few people, but...
Do it, just Bond, do it quickly.
Bond as a concept is, like, if you don't take it as a slightly silly action, like, series, like, as a concept throughout them, there are a few exceptions, which I'm sure we'll talk about later in the show, but as a whole, it's a film for boys that didn't quite grow up.
Rather like a sweeping statement, considering we've never met.
I couldn't have picked a better clip.
No, you couldn't have. That was great. So for me, like going into any Bond film, I don't usually. I'll walk out going, "That was a decent action film." But that's really what I go in for. I go in for the spectacle, for the explosions, for the fun, and for the amazing action scenes. This is kind of light on the action scenes. So because of that, like, just not as epic as some of the building running, you know. Riding a motorcycle through like 10 bazillion, you know, it's just, I don't think it was as heavy. And even the finale, I don't think was quite as showy as they usually do it. It was kind of a bit downbeat. Now that works on two fronts for me. On one side of me, from the action point of view, I felt very meh about certain parts of it. I think it lulls quite a few times for me. The film is also quite long. And I will put in the stipulation, I watched it late at night, so there was a part of me going, this is a really long film. But the fact that I was at that point where I was kind of like, this is a really long film, is one thing. On the other side, I want to congratulate Bond for creating possibly the most adult Bond film I've ever seen. Like, this is a film that doesn't delve as deeply into the wild sexual escapades of Bond, keeps it a little bit more linear and focused. You've also got, I'm waiting for that clip. Go on, Truffle.
Bond, what do you think you're doing?
Keeping the British end up, sir.
Exactly. No, but this is exactly the thing for me. It's like it stayed a lot more balanced. The Bond girl wasn't necessarily quite as Bond girly as
that. But God, she was hot,
dude.
Oh,
and that's
God.
Fine. Like, dude, totally. I don't expect them to ever stop making them hot. Like, I don't. I'm not one of these people.
There's a factory somewhere that's pumping out Bond girls.
Yeah, just pumping out Bond girls. No, but at the same time, it's like I have no problem with attractive people on screen in a film. That's the whole reason we watch films. If I wanted fucking fat people in films, I'd be watching reality TV. I mean, that's essentially what we're doing. I'm not interested in
this. Or
there's
special sections of the internet we can go to that.
Where you can actually see fucking fat people. Yeah.
No, but like, and dude, when I say that, again, I'm not saying that everyone in films has to be perfect. I'm just saying that, like, a film like Bond is supposed to be that kind of a world. That's the way it's set up. I think the Bond villain was great. I think the idea of Bond, like taking Bond in this situation, like this not only dark, but also different Bond, like this really weird Bond, to see Bond struggle to do anything was a really, not only odd feeling, but a really interesting spectacle, because to me it was like, you know, this guy can do anything. And to watch him struggle with it changed the whole way you look at Bond. And especially because he's a broken man throughout the whole film. And that's a really interesting way to play with Bond. And from that aspect, I loved it. But there were a lot of times, like especially towards the final scenes, like the lead up to the final confrontation, I was kind of like, this could be cut. This could be shortened. I don't need to spend like a 35 to 40 minute section watching them play freaking Home Alone to set up a house for a freaking assault. And I'm not even, like, that's not giving away spoilers, but I was looking at these scenes going, we could do this in 10 minutes. It doesn't take away from storyline. It doesn't take away from feelings. And then introducing strange character at that particular moment that doesn't need to be there. He serves no purpose apart from for one particular story moment that he essentially is only there to do one particular scene. Now, there's rumors I've heard as to why his character was in there and that he was supposed to
be. There was supposed to be a cameo
and that got let down at the last moment. But even if that cameo was there, I don't know that I actually cared that the scene had to go that long, but bar that, I enjoyed myself. If that's something, I'm seeing, dude, you're looking straight into me.
No, I'm listening quite intently because it is a really common point of view.
Yeah,
I've actually heard this a few times, especially with the last quarter, the last act.
Yeah,
a lot of people have derided the last act of this film.
Yeah, like I think the overall story arc is really interesting and really good. I think exiting Judi Dench definitely felt like she was aware that this was
spoilers.
Oh shit! Yeah, that is a spoiler. We'll cut that out.
We'll add a disclaimer at the beginning of the episode.
If you want,
unless you've read the Wikipedia entry where they go into great details.
The reason that it didn't click for me is because someone spoiled it for me before I went into the film, so it just wasn't an attached reality, unfortunately.
Yeah. Actually, I think we will put a disclaimer at the beginning and basically say that we're probably going to be throwing a few spoilers, because Skyfall has been out for about 3 weeks now. So, it has been out for a while. There may be spoilers thrown in here and there. They will be accidental.
Yes.
We will actually still have an official spoiler zone where we can really cut loose, but in case something slips out, please bear with us.
So that's the exact thing for me. It's like the way that Judi Dench's character was sort of handled in this film. She was trying her best, but there was definitely that sense that this was her last one, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. But by that, I want to hear what somebody else said.
Richard?
Yeah, I didn't see it. No, it's... nice, what did you say about Judi Dench?
Now, Richard.
Yeah.
Oh, pipe down, 007.
But of course. As Josh was sort of saying at the start, like, I mean, James Bond films have gone from sublime to the ridiculous.
Yeah.
And until the whole reason they did the Daniel Craig reboot was because they would become a parody of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, people expected them to be fast cars, even faster women, and James Bond, who became virtually superhuman by the end of the Pierce Brosnan run. Yeah. And the villains were too. I mean, you know, spoilers for an old movie, but sure.
Consider all old James Bond movies pre Daniel Craig. Spoiler, absolutely territory.
Well, Sean Bean, who dies in a lot of fashionable ways, but he fell from a giant thing dish and then had a satellite crush him to kill him off. I mean, that's
well. And then we started getting into the people who had no feelings. What was it?
That's right.
And then the guy with the diamonds in his face and another one.
Jaws as well.
And Jaws was on. And there was a great clip. I didn't grab it for the soundboard, but there was a great clip where it just goes, "That's Jaws. He kills people."
I mean, even Oddjob going back to Goldfinger is a ridiculous villain. You know,
but that was kind of a trademark of James Bond as well.
Yeah. But they had these trademarks, but then the trademarks became kind of burdens for the series, and they became ridiculous. So, as Josh said, it's sort of refreshing to see them trying to bring it back down to reality, which, again, I rewatched
also
the...
Also modernising.
Modernising. I mean, I rewatched the Casino Royale and Harry Potter and the Quantum of Solace again. to get a
Harry Potter and
Harry Potter. Don't you think Quantum of Solace sounds like a Harry Potter?
Harry Potter and the Quantum of Solace. I like that. I like that. That's good.
So I watched those two back to back after I watched
the only way you can watch them actually, because Quantum of Solace is actually crap on its own.
Means nothing. And I remember, because I saw it at the cinema and then didn't want to see it again until I picked up the Blu-ray recently. I bought that big box set. Awesome box set, by the way. but anyway, I like this film. I like it a lot. And I like the fact that this one is unapologetically British.
Mm.
It spends a lot of its time in London. And if not London, there's that final act that's set in Scotland.
Yeah.
To me, the only issue I might have with this film is that that final act feels like a different movie. It's like they've kind of gone off, and I loved your Home Alone comment. That was great.
Because I
read in my thing as the sort of do-it-yourself siege in my review, and that was, but that's it. I mean, that's exactly it. And it's sort of to me though. I think it was great though because it still shows that there's still some surprises up Bond's sleeve after 23 films in 50 years. How many other series are good for 4 entries, let alone 23.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing.
I mean, they haven't always been good.
Yeah, I was about to put that little caveat.
But
it's more hit.
But all of them have something. Yeah. And that's the thing. They all have something.
Oh, dude. And, you know, like you can look at the Bonds along the way that have had the least amount of effect or were arguably the worst films. And then look at the fact that games and movies all over the place have taken stuff from Moonraker.
Mm.
Whether it be the outfits, whether it be the designs. Yeah. It's like there was work on these films. And there are people that will love them just for how stupid they were.
And funny thing is, for all the classicness that the Connerys are, I rewatched Dr. No the other day. Dr. No is not a very good film.
And this is my point. Yeah.
But this film has like a clear line of sight straight back to those films.
Yeah.
The fact that it's in Scotland is acknowledging his Scottish heritage, which really only comes from Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Because Ian Fleming, actually, after the films came out, started writing into his novels about how James Bond was born in Scotland.
Right.
Mm. So it was kind of like, you know, pop eats itself eventually. Look, I love this film. It looks beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's like, I mean, those scenes in Macau and in Shanghai in particular.
Mm. The scene with the sniper in front of that neon sign.
Glass.
Oh, it's just beautiful. Yeah. Apparently that was mapped out well in advance. They had models of the sets. They had to work out the lighting for that. And it shows that they cared about the way this film looks.
The thing is, you know, sometimes you get films with sequences like that and the rest of the narrative falls apart because they've spent six months mapping out this one sequence. But no, it all holds together fairly well. The characters are beautiful. I mean, the returning characters know their people, know their roles inside out.
Yeah, the replacement characters were good, though I would... No, actually, I'll save that for the proper spoiler section.
Yeah, what's his name? Badem's Silver character. I mean, it seems to me like every time he's got bad hair, he plays a pretty decent villain.
Power of the hair.
The power, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty basic. Apparently, he actually looked at Jaws as well, as partly, but to me, it's like a cross between Hannibal Lecter and Jaws, not least of which because there's a scene in there. Mm.
There's also a little bit of the Robert Shaw character from Russia with Love going on in there. There's a few factors going on.
He was particularly interested in characters that were physically damaged, physically scarred, and what that does to them, how that twists people.
Mm. It's that real return to the old school Bond villain, which is something that I kind of liked.
But I love that there's this little twist on there, and I love this scene because it's like, he's got Bond tied to a chair. It's minor spoilers. Yeah. He's got Bond tied to a chair.
It's in the trailer.
And he's making sexual advances to him.
Yeah.
You know, meanwhile saying things like, "Mummy has been very bad." But the thing I love about that scene is that Bond twists it back when he makes his sexual advances to him. And Bond's kind of like, "Yeah, well, I've done that before. What else you got?" And it's kind of, it's meant to be this ultimate thing.
They almost have sex right there on the floor. Kind of, it is an amazing scene.
And it's meant to be, and you could, because like it got to a point where it's almost going to be homophobic.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, I'm trying to take away Bond's main weapon, which is his penis.
Yeah.
You know,
take away his masculinity
by making homosexual advances to him. Bond's kind of going, been there, done that, what else you got?
Yeah.
And it's kind of good. It's an interesting sort of little power play that was going on there. And I found that an interesting aspect to it as well. I just think that this felt like an ending and a beginning. Mm. It felt like the whole film felt like, we've sort of mentioned a few, end of an era for a few characters, but very much setting up, you know, Bond for years to come.
And we'll cover that in spoilers, because there's some stuff at the end which is terrific, which I really like. Now, I really enjoyed this film. I don't think it's a perfect film. I think that there are issues. I'll just say Train. you guys know what I'm talking about. Yeah. I will come back to spoilers. We'll talk more about that.
Take the bloody shot.
There are a few issues. No, I was thinking the train in the middle of the film.
Oh, right.
That's right. And the suddenness and most well-placedness of it, which I thought was just... You skirt the line of, this is just a little bit silly. You know what I mean? But that is balanced by the fact that I think what we have here is an absolute return to Bond. Mm. I think James Bond films always reflect their time. There was another podcast, which I won't go into details as to who it was, but there was a podcast in there, and the host kept saying all the way through, where does this fit into Bond continuity?
Yeah.
And everybody was saying, you've got to stop thinking like that, because the bottom line is James Bond always reflects the time it is made.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They have no continuity to each other.
Nope.
So
even in the novels.
In the 70s, In the 70s, we've got Moonraker because Star Wars is huge. You know, we have, you know, whatever it might be at that time based on that. So this is the Bond for our time, right? Yeah. At the time when Casino Royale was made, everybody was saying it should be more Bourne-like. So they made a more Bourne-like Bond.
That's right.
Now, when the last Bourne film came out, they kind of went, you know, we're kind of over this.
Yeah.
They predicted this, they've moved ahead, and they've actually given us, I think you summed it up perfectly, Richard, when you said it's a beginning and an end.
Yeah.
Because basically it is the end of Casino Royale Quantum of Solace era. Yeah. We're finished with that now, and it is the beginning of Bond. We're back, okay? He is now James Bond, you know? It is now back to Q, minor gadgets. Yeah. It's back to something that the action, like you mentioned, I actually had no problems with the way that the action was structured, because this is very old-fashioned Bond action. Mm. This wasn't parkour. This wasn't driving motorbikes through several buildings, because that's Jason Bourne style.
Yeah.
Mm. You know? This was old-school Sean Connery-style action.
Well, it's that concept of a Bond that's a little bit less physically...
Yeah, absolutely.
...physically capable. I mean, like, the Bond that people know so well will always choose the suave or the smooth option as opposed to the action. And I think that's what it is.
He got his suave back.
Well, see, they had the first few Daniel Craig films. He's a blunt instrument.
Yeah.
Mm. But here is that wonderful scene in the first train sequence when the back of the train's being pulled off.
It's in the trailer.
It's in the trailer. He jumps in and then adjusts his sleeves when he lands.
And that's Bond. It's perfect.
Yep. And that is very Bond.
Yeah. That's Bond. And you sit there, and as soon as I saw it, I almost want to cheer.
Yeah.
You know? And you sit there and go, fuck, it is. We're here. It's an absolute, you know?
Yeah.
And when we talk about spoilers, which we'll jump to in a minute, we talk about what happens at the end.
Yep.
And you just sit there and go, I'm home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm absolutely home. The final act of this film didn't bother me.
No.
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was an interesting way to end it.
Don't get me wrong. When I said it felt like another film, I'm not saying that in a negative sense, but it was its own vibe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm not taking away from anything you guys have said. I'm just saying I've heard a lot of people talk about the fourth act, and they're all saying it all falls apart in the fourth act. Mm. I don't think that. I think that you need that fourth act because that's where Bond is born.
Oh, dude. And it's the scene from like the final, almost like the wrap-up bits, or, you know, as much as the whole film, because I look at it and I'm like, that's the Star Wars episode 3 moment, where it was like, whatever you thought about the rest of the film, those final moments are so pivotal to everything that is Bond.
And as you're saying, the taking out of Judi Dench, this is where we finish that chapter.
Yeah. Mm.
This chapter is over. This is how we're going to do it. And quite frankly, I mean, that house...
quite literally takes us back to 1962.
Yes. Absolutely. And even the house explosion, all that stuff, it's just magnificent looking. You know, I mean, this
thing, and you couldn't make... And as I said, this movie is quintessentially British.
Yeah.
They ended up making something on the moors. You know, it was just such a beautifully, you know...
Gorgeous. And the way it's shot with the house burning in the background with the mist across. Yeah. I mean, it's just gorgeous to look at. I had no problem with any of that. I didn't even have any problems with the fact that... Some people have actually criticized, won't say who, but some people have actually criticized that it's all too simple in the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It all feels like it's not grand enough an exit for the bad guy and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I didn't find that. I kind of went, it needed to end that intimately.
Mm.
It needed to end as intimately as that scene in the chair.
Yeah,
you know,
because
that's where it starts. This is where it's going to end. You know, and I kind of like that. This isn't a giant tanker eating submarines movie.
Actually, I can't remember which Pierce Brosnan film it was on. And it was like driving a tank with like a statue on top of it through the city.
Oh, that's GoldenEye.
That's GoldenEye. Yeah, that's GoldenEye. At the time, I liked the film, but then I was watching that the other night thinking, That's fucking ridiculous. Yeah. Compared after three Daniel Craig...
Let's not forget that in Die Another Day, he has an invisible car.
Yeah, exactly. there was a really great Top Gear special they did recently, 50 Years of Bond Cars.
Yeah.
And they went through all the cars, and it's a really fun special. And they tried to recreate two cars. They successfully recreated the submarine car. And they also did their invisible car by getting a truck and putting screens all around it because it's the same technology, and driving it. Look, I'm completely invisible to these townsfolk. I can do anything. They can't see me.
Quite frankly, I will come back to this in the little Bond retrospective, but I love the Lotus. The submarine cars.
The Esprit
was one of my favorite Bond cars. And it actually worked.
Speaking of Bond cars, though, an old friend does come back for this film.
Oh, yeah. Which is
the Aston Martin DB5.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love the fact that he even has the ejector seat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love that conversation. Yeah. That was just brilliant. I was sitting there going, oh, that'd be so sweet.
So, overall, I mean, I highly recommend it. I really enjoyed it.
Dude, I think if you've seen any of the Bond films, you need to see this just to kind of put it back together to see where we're going from here.
Because they went so wrong with Quantum of Solace.
Yep.
I mean, the bottom line is Casino Royale was great fun. They went so wrong with Quantum of Solace. They needed this film.
Mm-hmm.
This film brings Bond back, you know? And now, let's move on. You guys heard the rumor that Idris Elba has been approached? So they're saying...
to be Bond.
They're thinking about going black.
I've got a slight issue with this because when people talk about...
Because you're racist, now we get it.
Because I'm racist, yeah. When people either talk about, you know, we're going to have a black Bond or maybe a female Bond, it's like, no. James Bond is a snooty, snobbish, white Englishman. Yeah. That is the character. It's like, you know, you're not going to suddenly go back and...
Well, apparently, Idris Elba has been in talks. This is rumor at the moment. Apparently, he has been in talks. Daniel Craig has signed for two more.
Mm.
So he'll be here for another two, but
I can totally see Idris Elba as a super spy character. Dude, I think that would be awesome. Amazing. But not as James Bond. James Bond is James Bond. That's the character.
May be happening. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
I've also heard that the next two, there's a rumor going around that the next two are actually going to be filmed as a two-parter.
Written
as a two-parter.
Yeah, I wish they wouldn't do it because Bond films are always nicely self-contained.
The only time that they tried to do that was back in, and I know I'm jumping the gun for a retrospective, but at the end of On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
We've kind of been doing it as we're going, really.
Yeah, that's right.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service, they did the ending, of course, is famously that he gets married and then his wife's killed almost immediately. Yeah. What they originally wanted to do was to have him get married at the end of that thing, and the very first scene of the next film.
Killer.
Was going to be killing her off. That would have been more classic Bond. The fact that they ended up doing, you know, killing two things, you know, Bachelor Bond and then his killing his last chance at being free, you know, at the end of the same film. That was such a ballsy move. Of course, they paid the price and George Lazenby was made the scapegoat and never came back.
Interestingly, we'll talk about this a little bit more in our little retrospective, but interestingly enough, when you actually watch stuff about the Bond films, Lazenby was let go because he was asking for more money, more power. More this. They basically fired him because he was a pain in the ass to work with.
There's a lot of rumors. Yeah. There's a lot of different stories about that as well, that he got blamed for it, at the end of the day,
most people would actually say, there's actually a lot of talk out there, which would actually say that On Her Majesty's Secret Service is actually not a bad Bond film.
I think this was the one I was going to bring up.
Yeah,
it actually has some really great action sequences. It's got some really good stuff. He's not very good, but the film is good.
It's ballsy, you know what I mean? It's like it's ballsy, and it was so weird for a Bond film to take such risky moments. It's like how that finished. I was like, are you really? Yeah. Like, because I switch off 90% of the time in Bond films. I'm there for the action, and then when people start swarming each other, I'm like, you're 50 and you look like you date my fucking grandma, so I'm gonna switch off. And I usually come back when things start getting interesting. And it was like, that was a great end.
But of course, after that film, they managed to get back Sean Connery for what's it called?
You Only Live Twice.
Diamonds
Are Forever.
Diamonds Are Forever, where he met a character called Plenty O'Toole, giving rise to this classic line.
Oh, this line here, you mean?
Hi, I'm Plenty.
But of course you are.
Exactly. The line after that is she gives her full name, Plenty O'Toole, and goes, named after your father, perhaps.
But that wasn't the only time that he used that line, because I believe Roger Moore also said this.
Welcome, sir. I'm Jenny Flex.
Of course you are.
So anyway, let's. I just very quickly.
I should look up Bond girl names.
Very very quickly, I'm just going to throw us into a spoiler zone just for the ending, because I want to talk about the ending very quickly. As usual, once you hear that turn, it means everything between this and the time you hear it again will, of course, be spoilers. Anything
more spoilers goes. Than what I've already wrecked.
Anything goes. And I just want to say, how charming was it at the end of this film when he walks into the office and it actually looks like the classic M office?
Yeah.
Rafe finds behind the desk looking like a proper M, Miss Moneypenny at the desk, and he just went, I'm home.
Yeah, that's, you know? that's what I meant about that great cyclicness to that final scene. It's like, it is the only reason that I have the third Star Wars film is for that last 5 minutes where I go, this is perfectly done. And it's sort of like, I wish I could somehow take that film and replace the rest of those films with other films, and then I would be really happy. I would like to bring out one before we go into the ending, because the ending's kind of like going to finish off and sum up this whole thing. I would like to say that I think it's an incredibly stupid moment, considering that they're trying to modernize Bond. I'm just sick and tired of films being so stupid with using technology as an easy plot device out. That scene where a man that's supposed to be in a room, like a room full of technology-based people, like people that know how to hack, people that know how to secure, to plug in an unsecured computer, which is just a time bomb of crap. This is a guy who broke
through. Oh my god, we're being hacked.
And I looked at that and I was like, you dumb people. Like, you can't use stuff like this. It's just not realistic. Yeah. And it's like, I know it's a Bond film and I know that
are moments, the other moment I mentioned during the review was the train. Come on. They're in the middle of, he's escaping, they're running, but okay, as much as he may have had this planned, right on cue, he goes beep with a button. And
no
the
train system in the world is that
the train comes barely through that room.
If it had been in Japan, I would have believed it.
Yeah, maybe. But that train comes barely through, right on cue, right on target. It's like,
but I would have been all right. I would have been all right with it if he had said something like that, and there was this awkward pause, and then he's looking around. He's
been
like,
on the London Tube.
No, wait.
Wait. Here it comes.
You know, I recently spent 2 weeks on the London Tube, and that'd be it. It'd be like, boom.
Or just have a conversation like that, where he's like, trains, right? And he's like, what? And then the train comes out. I know, I'm like,
so is something supposed to happen there? Yeah. Just bear with me, okay? I could probably just come up and get you on the ladder now.
So, yeah.
Just hang on.
And as spectacular as the train coming through looked, I mean, it looked like a great Bond set piece, but it was a bit on
David,
the nose timing-wise.
After 50 years of Bond films, that's really at least, you know.
But the one thing I will give them credit for, the one thing I thought was really, really interesting was the demise of the female lead. I thought this was... No, I thought it was ballsy. Yeah. That was ballsy.
There's two deaths of female leads in this film.
Oh, I'm talking about Severin, though. I'm talking about the fact that...
Oh, no, I'm talking metaphorical death, but you go and talk
about Severin. I'm talking about Severin. The fact that he meets her, she's the typical Bond girl, she's gorgeous, she's sexy, blah, blah, blah. He picks her up, whatever, he gets out to that island, and then the guy's got her tied up and says, let's shoot something off of her head, and blows her brains out. And you sit there and go... Wasn't she supposed to be the romantic lead in this film? It's like they just took that entire thing and just pulled the rug out from under me.
You know? the other thing, the problem I have with the character of Eve, who we're in the spoiler zone, right?
Yeah.
Who we later find out is actually Eve Moneypenny.
Right.
She is actually written as Bond's equal for most of this film.
It's because she's black, isn't it? It's your racist again.
No. I'm actually saying quite the opposite. Okay, good. She's written as Bond's equal for... this film. She's a capable soldier.
Yep.
She actually
shot.
She actually managed to hit something on a moving train, even if it was James Bond. I mean, that was an impossible shot anyway. She's smart, she's savvy, she's sexy, she's everything James Bond is, but in female form. Yet, at the end, she's like, oh, I'll just become the secretary to the new
M. It didn't suit
me. I don't
me.
Need that. And it's like, and that's why I said literally takes us back to 1962, because... that in that moment it kind of undoes all the hard work that this is the first consciously a friend of mine, Lee Zachariah, who wrote a piece on his blog, said this is one of the first James Bond films that has consciously tried to break down all those sexist stereotypes.
Yeah.
Like, you mean like this?
Looks more fitting for a woman.
Do you know much about guns, Mr. Bond?
No. I know a little about women.
Exactly. Like, I mean, he actually wrote that, you know, this is the first time where they actually consciously said, look, we're aware of what James Bond does. This is what we're doing. Unfortunately, as he argues, that the problem with that is being aware of it heightens all those sexist points as well. And that ending kind of, even though we were home, we were back, part of me was thinking, really, after all that, she's going to be a secretary?
The ending would have been better for me if it had been a different Miss Moneypenny.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything but that character was fine up until that moment. Mm. I wanted Miss Moneypenny. It didn't have to be her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or dude, like a great thing would have been to take that character, like not the desk-bound Moneypenny, but the Eve character, like taking that person and then just inserting her into the numerous amount of regular Bond characters we have.
Yes.
Have just a female agent that's out there. That would be the perfect way to balance these films. She could have been
basically the next Felix Leitner. She could have. Yes. She just could have come drifting in and out. You know
dude,
what I mean?
Dude, yeah. She shows up. She's on a different mission. She's at a mission. She's there to give him something or to do something in a scene. It's like, if you want balance, then work properly on it.
In that one scene, they took away the two strongest females in MI6.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Well, scene before they took out the first one.
Well, no. But I mean, it was replacing the two strongest females in MI6 with a new male M.
In fact, they literally, in that film, putting the worst amount of crap on the films that they
entire, well, you can think about the last 5 minutes is the most misogynistic thing of the film.
Exactly.
Yeah. Completely misogynistic.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's interesting way you put it.
Jesus, that film sucks.
Yeah, you know what? Now that you've said it that way, I really did feel home. Now it felt like a James Bond movie.
Yeah, that's probably why. And
all I got to say to that is,
bitch.
Okay. let's move on. Nobody says bitch like Sean Connery. Can I just say that?
I know, because there's a disturbing amount of real belief behind it.
Bitch.
Anyway, we should move on. Let's get out of the spoiler zone. I do have a spoiler zone here somewhere there.
You know,
so we've actually been covering...
I was amazed at how we still managed to keep the insects in that room.
I know, it's good, isn't it? There's no screens there. They come in with it.
We really need to work on
problem
that.
Is with that vault door, we always leave the screen door open.
All right, so we've been kind of covering the old Bond films as we've been going along. Mm. But what are your feelings towards Bond, Josh? I mean, let's start with you. I mean, is Bond a large part of your life, or...
Well, look, I mean, I've been through and seen most of them. I mean, growing up, like, before you really attach any sort of, like, when films are just films, when movies were just movies, they didn't mean anything, what they were saying didn't, you know, like, during that period of time, they were just around, be they at friends' houses, be they rented from a store, it's like, I've seen them all. As I grew up, and kind of probably once I hit, like, 17, 18, as I started to watch them, I started to have huge problems with a lot of things like that, like the fact that there was this undertoned level of, like, things that we just try and forget because they're from a period that were inappropriate or that weren't cool or that were really, really, really wrong when you look at them again. And, like, I started to watch these things and go, I can't call myself a Bond fan because to do that says that I accept these things and I don't, and I have a problem with a lot of these parts to it. So because of that, as time has gone on, I don't call myself a Bond fan. I've watched and enjoyed moments and parts of all sorts of Bond films, but in the same way that I can watch a crappy action film and see one good scene in it, you know what I mean? It's like there is elements to James Bond I adore. I love the concept of the suave secret agent. I always have and I always will. I love the idea of subterfuge and crazy, you know, sort of villains and stuff like this. This is the stuff that I take from these films and enjoy. But Casino Royale was a rebirth for me, literally to the point where I can say I'm almost proud to be a James Bond fan.
Right.
Because this film really did something with the series and modernized it. Then we had, you know, Quantum of Solace, and I didn't hate it, but I was like, eh, you know, I mean, like, it's still...
It's a giant misstep.
It kind of stepped back for me. It kind of stepped back to what it was, and I was like, I don't care about this character. I find that it's too short. Like, it's far too short. I always feel like the Quantum of Solace is over before it's done anything. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of got this film, and I was like, look, we're going in the right direction, and I like where this is going. We need more action films. We don't get enough badass action films anymore. Like, no one has the balls to just take a situation out into the middle of nowhere unless it's a sci-fi epic or something like that. It's like, we don't take just modernized normal day action movies. It either has to be war or it has to be sci-fi. That's essentially where we sit now. So people like James Bond
or Bourne.
Or Bourne, exactly. But Bourne is, as we've just said, very close to this current Bond. And it's like, I want more of these films to exist, so I don't want Bond to disappear, because if we do, then it's all up in a puff of smoke. There's no chance of these kind of films happening. But at the same time, not the biggest fan from that point, but I can literally tell you almost anything about Bond films.
So for you, Daniel Craig is your Bond?
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a certain amount of me that enjoys Pierce Brosnan minus the smug. Like, the smug does minus take up... smug. It does take up 90% of the screen while he's on there, but at the same time, those films brought about the games that I love as well, so that's another part to it. Like, there's an attachment from that point of view because I look at that. Also, because of GoldenEye as a game, I revisited all it because all of the characters were part of the thing. Odd Job and all this, they were part of your character makeup, so there were all these people, and then I'd learn them as I'd go back and rewatch the Bond films and figure out where they were all from. It's sort of like there is a history to it that I do like. And then I think some really interesting characters that can only come out of, like, a very simplistic story model. Like, you know, where you have to... where your characters are essentially your set pieces. You have to make these people interesting because your story is ridiculously bland. Like, ridiculously bland. Other than that, yes, I would say Craig is my Bond because Craig is the closest. Like, he had feelings, he had emotions, he was realistic, he wasn't about abusing or over sexualizing certain characters. It was just...
What's the first Bond film you ever saw?
Whew.
Think about that while I go, Richard.
Go, Richard.
Who's your Bond?
Well, it's funny. I mean, in terms of age and when I was kicking around, it should be late era Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton during my formative years. I always had more of an affinity with Sean Connery. He's my definitive Bond, simply because I think when I started watching movies in a serious way, they were the ones I went back and saw it first. And being the anal bastard that I am, I went back and watched them all in order. and I did that. I remember sitting down one summer or something, just watching them all from Dr. No all the way through. I think the most recent one at the time was probably Tomorrow Never Dies or something. I think I saw... I've certainly seen from GoldenEye onwards in the cinemas. Before that, I've got to say it, you know, I didn't have a huge interest of it, although I was a child in the 80s. I was more of your sci-fi action fan than anything else. But for me, Connery is always the definitive one. He is actually quite different to what James Bond became, because when Connery was in the role, he was a little bit rough around the edges as well, which is what Daniel Craig does as well. He's a blunt instrument. This is what Bond should always be. From Roger Moore through to Pierce Brosnan, he was basically a watch model in a suit.
Watch model.
I mean, and
certainly from Dalton and Brosnan, the points when the product placement almost did overtake the films. I mean, I can't remember which Pierce Brosnan one I was watching the other night, but it was like, you know, someone actually said, "Well, what's your..." And maybe it's actually even a Daniel Craig one. They said, "What watch is it?" "Oh, it's Omega."
Yeah,
you know, when that dialogue shouldn't be in a film. You know, and I love it whenever they're sitting down, you know, the Sony Vios come out at any opportunity now.
Because they'd be co-produced.
You know
by
which company
Columbia,
is taking over the, you know, the franchise at that point.
Yeah.
But for me, yeah, it's always going to be Connery. Because there was something about the 60s which was just definitive Bond. It's like your definitive Cold War 60s Bond to me. Like, you know, the later stuff all got tied up with the Soviets and missiles.
Well, what's interesting is my Bond was always Roger Moore. First Bond film I ever saw was 1977, was The Spy Who Loved Me. And I saw that at the cinema, and I have really fond memories of seeing it. Although I don't have fond memories, and I was talking to Richard about the show, about this before the show, Josh, I have a surprise for you.
Yeah?
I have a surprise for you, which is, we all know this... Okay, so we all know that,
fucking
right?
Fucking guitar, man.
All right, so in 1977, what a lot of people don't know is a Bond went through a bit of a tricky spot there. Bond, they didn't make a new film for a few years because Bond had kind of lost his audience. They were kind of trying to recreate this character.
Yeah.
In 1977, The Spy Who Loved Me came out, and it was actually remarkably successful, and it's reinvigorated the entire Bond line again. And one of the things they tried to reinvigorate was they tried to invigorate the theme.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 1977 was a 1977 was a an interesting, to use a polite phrase.
Hold on to yourself, Josh.
Was a polite was an interesting era of music, and a lot of it was disco. And this was the James was the James Bond theme from The Spy Who Loved Me. As you can imagine, it was quite a horrific thing to have the theme reworked.
I'm just imagining this like really happy, excited dude just being like, eh? Yeah. And the producers are just sitting there going,
well, the thing what? Is, it's Marvin Hamlisch, who is a Grammy Award winner and a Tony Award winner. And you sit there and go, he's going, here's your new theme. And it, you know what? Quite frankly, the producers are probably listening to this in 77 going, wow, that's groovy, dude. You know? Because it was the 70s.
Apparently the rest of the soundtrack was like mostly classical music as well.
Yeah, no, the rest of the soundtrack's actually pretty... I've actually got the soundtrack. It's actually... Here we go.
Oh, there's a bit of Bond theme.
You know, I can get the idea on that. I can let it go. Like, once you kick back into it, I'm like, yeah, all right, you can
do it. Richard and I were discussing, sounds like a porn parody of James Bond.
I'm sure it's been used for a
porn parody. We got some thrusting music in there. You know?
I want that to play every time I enter a room.
You should have it as a ringtone, bro.
Oh, I'm so converting it.
So, anyway, so Roger Moore was my Bond. And you got to remember that I'm a Star Wars kid. So, 1977... this is Star Wars era.
So just interrupt, what David's saying is he's older than us.
Well, yeah. We know that. I got gray in my beard. Anyway, the point is that I remember when I saw The Spy Who Loved Me, here's a super tanker opening up and swallowing submarines. And I mean, this was like nothing I'd ever seen before. You know, this was an action film, you know what I mean?
Oh, and it has one of the best Bond cars ever.
And it had the Lotus going underwater, yeah. And it's like, oh my God, this is all so amazing. And of course, this is followed, you got to remember, bear with me here, I am, 13?
Right.
Bond goes to space in Moonraker, you know? It's like, oh, you sit man. There and go...
Moonraker.
For a Star Wars child, this is Bond, you know what I mean? You go back and look at it now and you go, this is really stupid. But at the time, that, you know?
Like, I can't remember whether it's the soundtrack or just the soundtrack I'm making up in my head when it's playing, but that whole scene involving the gondola, it just makes me want to clap. Just slow clap.
You know what? I might even have.
Oh, dude, please tell me you have it.
I may even be able to help you out with the Moonraker soundtrack here, which I have. I do happen to have the Moonraker soundtrack.
We're taking this all home with us.
So let's have a look here. Bonds from Moonraker. I want all the Bonds. Ooh, where are we? I don't know which track it would be.
Moonraker no
Bond arrives in
Rio. I love the tagline for Moonraker, which was where all the other Bonds end. This one begins.
I don't know which track that would be, but here's a space laser battle. That's not it.
That's not it.
Bond arrives in Rio.
Yeah, it was something like this.
Alright, yeah. So
here's a bit of trivia. The climax
like Randy
of...
Newman should be over the top of
that. That was actually
seeing some guy.
and Moonraker also had a song.
He got it. I'm sure I was going with that.
Moonraker also had a song by the classic Shirley Bassey. Her third, I think it was.
Let's go with that.
You reckon she was just popping him out? Like, she was just like sitting in there and she's like, Moonraker! Yeah, no, I got it. Just roll it.
Right. Yeah, I reckon what happened is Shirley Bassey would just be singing songs in the house and they'd go, what should we name the next song? What should we name the next film? Shirley Bassey's come up with this song called Moonraker.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Wait. Does she say Moonraker in the song? Of course she does.
Where is that moonlight train that leads to your side? Wait, waiting for it. Just like the moon, Moonraker goes.
She's almost sneaking it in there because she's like, there's no realistic way I'm going to get this to work. Just move past that. Anyway.
All right. So now, I was saying to Richard before the show, I was big Roger Moore. I've seen every Bond film in the cinema from Spy Who Loved Me onwards. I had to go back and watch Connery. And so Connery, I really love. But you got to remember that in 77, there was no home video. In 77, we caught old Bond films on TV.
Yeah, but of course.
You know? So you one here, one there. You caught up with things on TV. It wasn't until much later I got to catch up with all the Bonds in order on VHS and stuff like that. Yeah. And I got to kind of catch up with them. And I love Connery. But I think Roger Moore has always got that special part for me.
Yeah,
and it's purely because that was my Bond.
Look, it's the same with Doctor Who, really. And it just depends.
Just like Tom Baker is my Doctor Who.
Depends on who you watched first, whatever. Like, John Pertwee is my Doctor. Because I watched him first. The dude's got a freaking cape.
Yeah.
You know.
And Tom Baker had a scarf.
And Tom Baker had a scarf. What? the Doctor, the definite article would say. And Connery is just it for me, and I just identify with Connery. I think, you know, and as we all know, he turned down between this is something we were talking about in great detail before the show, between You Only Live Twice and Diamonds Are Forever, he turned down a Bond to go and do Zardoz, where he was wearing what can only be described as a mankini.
The penis is evil.
Yes, it is. It is, David.
Well, really, I mean, it's not far off, really. It is evil.
Yeah. Well, that's a line from Zardoz.
Oh,
alright, so
seeing that picture of him in that clothing, you guys have got to check this out, just you podcast listeners. Just got to like Google
Sean Connery Zardoz.
Yeah.
Z-A-R-D-O-Z.
Like, and you will be stunned. Like, go on, we'll wait. There we go.
Yeah, right.
You see what we're talking about? Like, am I right? Seriously. Serious drugs happening in that film. Like, on and off set. Just saying.
Bitch.
All right.
I'm done. You know what?
I think we're pretty much done here, guys.
That's a show,
I think,
dude.
We've kind of killed ourselves. Listen, I just want to talk very quickly before we get out of here. Very quickly. A whole crap ton of trailers hit, and we're not going to play all those trailers.
That would be a metric crap.
That's a metric crap ton of trailers, along with the Superman Man of Steel trailer, which we played on the panel show, so we won't even go into that one. We had a new Star Trek trailer hit. We had Oblivion hit. Now, Oblivion is from the director of Tron Legacy and starring Tom Cruise, science fiction.
Hey, just quickly want to jump in. I heard that they've greenlit Tron 3 and that people are
signing up for this. Not Kaczynski, though. Apparently somebody else is making it. So
I would like to jump in for just a moment and go back to the chat room and just say, am I right? Like, that shot's amazing. You guys should just, like, make that your wallpapers on your phone, because that is disgusting.
Yeah.
Moving right along.
Let me just show you. Let's have a little extract from Oblivion. This is the new Kaczynski film. This is the guy who directed Tron Legacy with Tom Cruise.
The last Super Bowl was played right here.
Please don't tell me it was a classic.
Classic game. 80,000 people on their feet.
Seconds left on the clock.
So Hubie throws a Hail Mary.
Touchdown!
166, back online.
60 years ago, Earth was attacked. We won the war, but they destroyed half the planet. Everyone's been evacuated. Nothing human remains. We're here for drone repair. We're the mop-up crew.
This is Jack Harper.
So I don't know. Looks kind of interesting. Yeah,
I'm legitimately curious.
Yeah,
about
I'm intrigued. I want to see more. I want to see. I mean, I wasn't even really aware of much of Oblivion until that. This is the one that I really wanted to talk about, though. It's a huge sci-fi, huge sci-fi science fiction action era, along with Oblivion, along with what's the Earth one called again? The
Earth one.
After Earth. Thank you. Which is, funnily enough, his name is not mentioned on the trailer once, but is an M. Night Shyamalan film. But they've literally dropped his name completely from trailers now. So they're trying to. But this is Will Smith and Jaden Smith playing father and son, basically surviving on a future Earth where everything is now genetically bred to kill humans. Nice. So, yeah, nice. So, I mean, it could be kind of interesting. But Guillermo del Toro finally made a movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I still don't believe he's made that until it's in cinemas.
And all right, we'll wait to see it. It's in cinemas. But I got to tell you,
he's made a trailer as
I'm
far
just
as
waiting
I can
tell. For the 6 sequels that he's planning directly after it.
But the reason why I want to play this in particular right now, and then we're going to get out of here, is because I need Josh to hear something in this trailer. This is just an excerpt from this trailer. The film is called Pacific Rim, and it's basically giant fighting robots, Josh. What can you not like about giant fighting robots?
You know
robots?
What? I've done this before. Wait, I did this with Battle giant, Los Angeles.
Giant fighting robots. Giant fighting robot. Man-driven giant fighting robots against Godzilla monsters.
Getting closer, but I still, dude, I'm sorry, but like,
directed
I'm
by
sure,
Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, dude, I know, with and I know, over. And I just, yes, I know, that's like the one, like, thing where I'm like, this is happening, but.
But it has this voiceover, and this voiceover might make everything okay. Pay attention.
We always thought alien life would come from the stars.
Not the dude, but the girl.
From deep you sure? The sea, yeah. A portal between dimensions.
Portal.
The Pacific Ocean.
Portal. Godzilla monster.
Something out there had discovered us.
Squirrel.
They counted on the humans to hide, to give up, to fail.
Initiating launch operations. Gypsy danger.
They never considered our ability to stand, to endure, but we would rise to the challenge.
Pilots, ready to connect.
Let's go fishing.
Two pilots engaged in neural bridge. Ready to activate the Jaeger in 3, 2, 1.
All right, any movie that's going to star GLaDOS, I'm in.
My only thing is, my like instinct due to playing through 2 Portal games and literally being psychologically tormented by
I love her.
Yeah, I know. Look, dude, I do too. But after being psychologically tormented by, you know, 2 different games with this character, I'm like, you idiots, run! You don't have to worry about the Godzilla
monster. So the question is, Josh, we were talking about this. We're talking about this afternoon. Yep. The question is, did they license GLaDOS, because it's the same speech synthesis and everything, from
Portal.
No, Half-Life. What are they called? What? The company.
Valve.
Valve, thank you. Right, did they actually license all of that from Valve, or did they just get the actress back and basically said, oh, we'll make it sound like GLaDOS?
No, because that's GLaDOS. That's GLaDOS. So look, I mean, it could be one of 2 things. It could be that, for all we know, Valve could be involved in some other part of the thing. Or, dude, like something even more exciting for me, just like that part of me that always thinks way further than is
that
ever possible.
She is Aperture Labs.
Like there's some sort of fucked up tie-in between those 2 things, I'm totally down with that. But I don't care. Like, I'm just interested, A, to see that for what it is, but at the same time, you idiots, run! It's GLaDOS! She's going to turn the robots against you.
Look, the idea of Guillermo del Toro turning in a film, I mean, it looks like a cartoon. Let's face it. I mean, it doesn't look real in any way.
It looks like Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yes. It looks like it really does.
Let's form a neural bridge.
Including the fact that they're actually called Jaeger robots, and the monsters are actually called, they've got a name that sounds very Japanese as well. So it's all Pacific Rim, it's all set in Asia, you know, it's like, this is all.
No, look, this is, the thing is, I wish someone would get their act together and make the giant robot film that I want to see. This might be it. But like, I want to see the live action Neon Genesis film. That's what I want to see. I don't, you know, this might be the next best thing.
Possibly a little bit less wank. Like, we are talking about 100 episodes here,
and like the whole God, heaven, hell.
Well, look, I can deal with that as long as you handle it a lot less.
What was the original series that Robotech is called? Macross. Let's do Macross.
Yeah,
I can handle a Macross series.
Yeah, I could handle even Macross I could series. Handle a Macross series. Yeah, and I'm not from that old person.
Yeah,
generation.
Macross would be awesome. You know,
or a Gundam film.
Gundam, and we could have Gundam style.
Gundam style.
That's it.
Legally, also people walking out. Legally, that is the last time we have to mention Gundam style on any show we do this year.
ever. All right, guys, thank you very much. We're going to get ourselves out of here. We are going to... Oh, I think, you know what? I think I actually had one more, because we never mentioned Q. I had some Q clips here. There is this one.
They all said the pen was mightier than the sword.
Thanks to me, they were right.
Absolutely. all right, so... we're going to get out of here. Josh, where can people find more of you on the internet?
RoddyOC.com is a gaming website. There's all sorts of stuff. We have ramped up content bigger than you would possibly believe right now. It is killing me, and because of that, you should at least pay me the duty of going over and taking a quick look, because that seems fair. Other than that, I'm here, back, feeling good about that too.
Fair enough. That's Do you have anything you want to plug?
Not really at the moment. I'm mostly here. So I've my site's on Mothballs.
You can still find you on Twitter, though, can't you?
New announcement. Really Richard's now working for Raw DLC.
Yeah, right. I'm happy to do that.
There's a lot of changes going on with all of our sites. Bear with us. In the new year, everything will be made clear.
I want to write for someone else for a while, so I'm happy to do that.
Awesome. Fair enough. All right, and of course, you can find everything you want to know about this show and everything else at geekactually.com. We will be getting more announcements as we go. We've got the next show up will be The Hobbit in a couple of weeks. It comes out here on Boxing Day for the Americans. That's the day after Christmas. Mm-hmm. They don't have Boxing Day in America.
That is, of course, the prequel to the Matrix trilogy.
That's correct. well, it's got Agent Smith in it, so
that's true. My understanding.
Yeah. So we will be back for that. If you want to send feedback, you can send feedback to feedback@filmactually.com. And I forgot the reason why I hesitated. We do actually have one.
Oh, right.
And I forgot to read this before. He sent this actually a few weeks ago, but we haven't been having a show. Mike from Canada has written to us and said, "Hey guys, figured I'd write this before you film the next episode. Been watching Arrow. I don't know what crack us now. Hang on. I don't know what crack us like, but in my world, it's Arrow. So I think he's saying, I don't know what crack we all like, but in his world, it's Arrow. I know it's not good, but I can't stop watching. I disagree. No, I think it is actually good. It's good. That's why you can't stop watching it. Makes for damn great television. Looking forward to Twilight. Who wouldn't want to see a film about a 17-year-old werewolf falling in love with a fetus? Then that fetus aging faster than Robin Williams and Jack. Suggest End of Watch with my own personal guarantee. I haven't seen End of Watch.
I missed the screening, but it's meant to be quite good.
Okay. So he's suggesting Jake End of Watch. If the three of you don't like End of Watch, I will pay for your tickets. However, if
you
live
just pay for them anyway?
He says, however, if you you have to live within a 1 kilometer radius of my house because I'm cheap and to pay for international mail. Also, he lives in Canada. He's not paying for our tickets, guys. Also, Richard, I meant to check out your website. Could you please remind me what the name is?
Well, it's technically therealbits.com, although you're not going to find any
nothing new there at the moment.
No. In fact, there's a little we're closed sign up.
Yeah, I saw that. That's cute. Little. Yeah. Like that. Looking forward to your full return in 2013. So are we. There you go. Mike from Canada, thank you very much. Keep your emails coming. feedback@filmactually.com. We will see you for The Hobbit. Guys, that will be our official 100th episode.
Wow.
And then it's over.
100 episodes. That's it. Fuck you guys. I'm out of here.
100 episodes and what, like 5 good?
So, yeah, when I say we're out of here, we're actually coming back with a new show in the new year. So, but yeah.
Don't panic, guys.
We've saved
100. We're not just coming back with one new show in the new year.
No, we're coming back with a couple. So it'll be an interesting new year. All right, dudes, we're out of here. We're going out with Adele because I figured, what the hell? It's, you know, Skyfall.
David,
what can we do?
The Skyfall.
And here she comes. Goodbye, everybody. Bye, guys. This moment so overdue, I owe them, swept away.